one of the fundamental things of murder, one of the elements, is that somebody has to be killed.
So when a murder is discovered not to be a murder, what then? Especially when someone is serving a life sentence for a crime that now doesn't exist based on some new evidence. For this week's Case in Point, we learn of Jesse McKim of Missouri, who is serving a life sentence without parole for murdering a woman in 1999. There have been questions about this case all along, but in 2013 it was determined that the woman McKim allegedly killed seems to have actually died due to a meth overdose. When confronted with this new circumstance, the judge denied McKim's request for relief because, quote, he had not conclusively proved his innocence. Is that the way it's supposed to work? Jennifer Bukowski is an attorney in Columbia, Missouri, who's been working on Jesse McKim's case for years. She's with Andrew Cohen, senior editor at the Marshall Project, and our Case in Point guru, whose voice you heard a moment ago. He says this case seems to violate a basic legal principle.
There has to be some nefarious killing that takes place. And if you don't have that, then you're not going to be able to convince any judge, much less a jury, of convicting someone. And so what happened in this case is there was this initial finding that strangulation may have been the cause of death. Everyone ran with it back in 1997, 1998, 1999. A man was convicted and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And it turns out that the victim in the case probably wasn't strangled at all. Instead, died of methamphetamine overdose after some sort of a binge over 3 days before the end of her life. And if you take away the homicide component to a murder case, you really aren't supposed to have a murder case.
Jennifer, how did you find this case?
I'm a practicing attorney in Columbia, Missouri, and I received an unsolicited letter from a prisoner asking for help. And that in and of itself isn't that unusual for me to get these kind of requests. But enclosed with it was a letter from the medical examiner of the county that I practice in that I had cross-examined in my first murder trial 2 years earlier and who I had seen called by our prosecutor's office in every murder and manslaughter case in our county. In his letter, he said it was certain beyond a reasonable doubt that justice was not done here, and he implored the AG to reopen this case to take a look at it. That was something completely out of the ordinary, unlike anything I'd received before.
So the defendant you might have been skeptical of without some other information, but this medical examiner letter really said this needs to be looked at.
Right. And since I knew this medical examiner, it really stood out to me as something I should just do a little bit more investigation into. And once I did, it was so immediately clear that a terrible mistake had been made and an injustice was ongoing here with the imprisonment of this man for a murder that never even happened.
So, Jennifer, how many minutes did it take then for Mr. McKim to be released?
He's still in prison. As of April 14th, he's been in prison for 20 years for a murder that never occurred. And I've been working on this case. It'll be 5 years later this year that I've been working on trying to win his freedom. At the time I first took the case, I naively believed it would only take 10 to 20 hours of my time to convince the powers to be to let him out on the grounds that he was obviously actually innocent. But that turns out not to be the case.
Well, what's the argument keeping him locked up?
It depends on what stage of litigation at the trial court level where we did the habeas evidentiary hearing. The AG came up with this kind of dubious theory without any supporting evidence that, well, even if she overdosed on meth, then he must have injected her involuntarily with meth, and so he still caused her death and he should still die in prison as a result. The problem is, if you look at the jury instruction, which is one of the first things I did when I took this case, the jury found beyond a reasonable doubt that my client or his co-defendant caused this woman's death by suffocating her. The whole theory of the state's case at trial centered around my client having special knowledge of the cause of death being suffocation that only the real killer would know. So we know what the jury found beyond a reasonable doubt is wrong and that she died of an overdose. And also both the attorneys on both sides agree that she was binging for days on meth that she herself cooked.
Andrew Cohen, why is it possible for judges to inject a notion of Mr. McKim has to conclusively prove his innocence to be exonerated here, or a attorney general or a prosecutor injecting this theory of the drug being injected by the defendant when in court that would just be speculation?
Right. And it wasn't even a strong strangulation case, to be honest with you. The medical science wasn't conclusive that it was strangulation either. You had the prosecutors using an informant who clearly was trying to make a deal with the state to get leniency in his cases. So you had a weak case to begin with. And then the whole medical basis for the case falls apart. And the state's expert comes forward and says, yeah, this is not strangulation. This is methamphetamine. And so at that point, the state has a choice. And what the state chose to do was to say, never mind strangulation. We're going to go on this alternate theory that never was really introduced to the jury, for which there's no physical evidence. There's no puncture marks, evidently, on the corpse. And we're going to basically make the argument to a judge. And we're going to tell the judge, look, the values of certainty and finality here are important. And we think you should endorse this conviction, endorse this sentence. And it places McKim and his advocates and his attorneys in a difficult position. He has to essentially convince a judge that no other possible alternative is available except for this methamphetamine overdose. And it's been a universal rejection of the arguments for Jesse McKim, so much so that now he's asking the governor of the state for some sort of relief or some sort of mercy.
What's the option for Jesse? It sounds like the door is pretty much closed in the legal system, amazingly enough, but there's clemency, I suppose.
Right. We wisely vested, you know, pardon powers, clemency powers in the office of the governor for this very situation where the system fails and injustice has been done so that the governor, in his good wisdom, can correct it.
Any idea when, Jennifer?
No, there's no deadlines. I know the governor's busy. Hopefully before Jesse dies in prison like his co-defendant already did.
Jennifer Bukowski is an attorney in Columbia, Missouri, and Andrew Cohen, senior editor at the Marshall Project and author of Case in Point. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.